The whole new parsha is Emor, but I will take the liberty of saying, of bringing some tidbits, because it's not structured simply, but that I pick up as I was reading it, things that are nagea to some of the other issues of Emuna. I wanted to share two articles, both of them actually from the New York Times. One is April 3rd, one is March 29th. The April 3rd is a very interesting one. It's about a doctor Dr. Pardee, who was a leading practitioner in palliative care, which means helping people suffering from cancer, having an easy death, urging them basically not to fight for life when it seems pretty hopeless, and, you know, just to accept the pain-killing aspect and so on and so forth. She preached the gentle gospel of her profession, persuading patients to confront their illness and get their affairs in order, and above all, ensuring that their last weeks were not spent in unbearable pain. Now, it goes on to explain that she had had cancer when she was 31, survived it, and then when she was 40, it recurred again, and the way it's expressed, the next day, as the doctors began to understand the extent of underlying cancer, they asked me if I want palliative care to come and see me. She angrily refused. She had been telling other people to let go, but faced with that thought herself at the age of 40, she wanted to fight on. And the article goes on for 7 pages about how she was willing to undergo the most grueling chemo. She knew what it is, she knew her chances, she still wanted to live. But here's a very interesting understanding how a person's philosophy changes with the circumstances, and the fact that we so readily make a decision, wouldn't it be better for the old man to die? We don't take into account the person's wanting to live possibly, or that a person has an innate desire to live. It's just an interesting article to see how a person's shittas and theirs change when they were on the other side of the fence. The second one is more to the theme of knowing emes and sheker. It's about Roman Vishniak. I don't know, many of you might be familiar, maybe everybody. Roman Vishniak was a photographer in the 1900s who traveled Eastern Europe in the 30s and photographed thousands and thousands of photographs of Jewish life in Eastern Europe. They're available in books, very popular, A Vanished World, To Give Them Light, Children or something. Very, very powerful pictures, extraordinarily well done, and they all portray poverty and basically almost all from Jews in Eastern Europe. A picture's worth 1,000 words, unless the person forges a picture. A picture's the truth and only the truth, and one reads the book and feels that this is the closest to emes he has ever gotten. Now, there is an article in March 29th, 2010, called A Closer Reading of Roman Vishniak. It's a 10-page article, which basically has his daughter. This is a woman doing a doctorate on in something, and who touched base with, I think, the granddaughter of Vishniak. The bottom line is as follows. The pictures are genuine, that's correct, but there are captions on the pictures, and the captions are all not true. They simply just pluck out of thin air. For instance, you have a picture of a girl laying in a pretty creepy, decrepit-looking room. There are these faded flowers painted on the wall, like, you know, something like 40 years before someone had painted it. She's laying in bed, and the caption is called "The Closest She Ever Got to Flowers," and it says this girl doesn't have shoes, so winter she's stuck in the house, and this is the closest she is to flowers. They went through his files of unpublished pictures. There's this little sweet little girl is in shoes, prancing about outside somewhere at a later point. So and so on and so forth. He has a picture of a child and an adult, two pictures side by side. One of them kind of motions the other one, and he writes that he's signaling to the man about the pogrom that's coming, and they're telling him to hide. They later go through the pictures and realize they have no connection, so on and so forth. Basically, and interviewing people knew him, the conclusion is that all the captions that he made were simply out of thin air. A second interesting part is he had officially commissioned these pictures. He writes that this was like sort of a lishma, labor of love, to preserve a heritage, which would mean that these pictures were done at random, and this was sort of a statistically valid snapshot of life in Eastern Europe. What they did find out in the records was he was hired by, I think it was the Joint Distribution Committee, to photograph poor religious families. They needed the pictures to raise money. This was the clientele, which is valid. If somebody were to caption these pictures, these are poor families in religious families in Eastern Europe, they're probably valid. But one gets the impression that almost everybody was religious, which was not the case. Almost everybody lived in such grueling poverty, which is not the case. Now, as legufa shanyan, it's not so important to us, but what is important to us is when we see pictures, most of us have a hard time discerning what's in the picture. Rightfully so. A picture can be many things. Is Reuven slapping Shimon on the back? Is he stabbing him? Is he sneaking up on him? Are they posing? The caption we automatically take as being part of the picture. We also take a picture and understand it to be a random sample when it's Labdavka random sample. So, excuse me, is that class here now? No. Okay. We take it as a random sample when it's Labdavka random sample. It means that a lot of the things that we see, even scientific pictures, such as this is the following skeleton of this, this is that, you need to ask yourself, what do pictures say actually? Who's given the meaning to pictures? This is Roman Vishnak's works have been classic. They are widespread. They are considered to be as genuine as they come, and yet this is something which is it's telling you a story that's false. Knows the information, the vast majority of information you have from it is not true, which once again leads you to it leads one to be very careful that the conclusions of the things that you're given depends very much on the integrity of the person that's given. Even a picture depends very, very much on the person. A, setting up the picture. Forget about forging a picture, but setting up the picture, choosing the picture. If you'll take a look in a newspaper, if newspapers that are pro a certain candidate but are too cosmopolitan to write just against for him or against him, the picture they choose. You take 1,000 pictures of a person, and one of them he looks haughty, and one of them he looks sweet, and one of them he looks confounded, and one of them he looks very embittered, and you carefully choose the pictures, and people say, oh, so-and-so is being arrested, and you have a picture of him looking very worried. It looks like this is his reaction to being arrested. It may have been just another photo when he ate something he shouldn't have eaten, and he sort of looks kind of sick. There's no pictures are much more misleading because the meaning behind the pictures is given to you by somebody. Okay, those are two items I just wanted to share in the ongoing inyan, just help us get a better sense of how we approach fact and the knowledge and so on. Now let's go to things that are emes benitzius. The first one is the mitzvah of the iser of tumas meis for kohanim, and what's the term for it? It's a sefer chinuch. The chinuch says that being that kohanim are of a higher stature, kohanim are people that HaKadosh Baruch Hu chose to be over Hashem, so therefore they have to distance themselves from a mace. In a general sense, he says, I've explained to you that tumah is something which, in a broad picture, are things that are bad, things that are not, they belong to the things that are nimas v'nelach, even though it's not a physical mos, but it is shayach to the world of mos. What's the reason for it? So he says, a person consists of a physical self and a spiritual self, and a shaman a good. The person, when they're integrated, can be good, can be fairly good, can be very good. The Inu says, ki bi parid molav tzuras ha-seichel, ha-chaya tova, when the seichel, which is the life force, leaves a person, v'yishoyehu levado, and then the body by itself is left. V'shegamu basa pachos v'garua mishtakaras. It represents the flesh which only desires, only craves for the bad. V'gam b'ra'ose rabba hechtia ha'nefesh ha'yikara v'ayyash ha'nef etzlein. And it caused the nefesh to do averis as well. So in other words, as long as the person is an integrated guf and nefesh, one can look at the entire picture and say, you know, it's different aspects. But when we separate the two, you're left looking at the part of the person that has dragged him down and is innately hepech of kedusha. Therefore, he says, Al ken roishi tamei kol sviva bispashon kol hoidesh ezeo nafshoi. The reason why Mace is mitame, everything around him, is because you've basically boiled it down to the coarse part of the person that is prone for avera. And therefore he says, therefore it's appropriate that Kohanim, who are over the Hashem, should distance themselves from it. So he raises the problem, so why can they are mechuyev, to be mitame to their relatives? So he says, Zulasi bekroivim, shehut alehem kachiyem psarim hu, v'chol darkei haTorah noam unisoseh shalim. The Torah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, did not distance them from krovim, because darkei Torah are noam unisoseh shalim. Chol drachel darkei noam unisoseh shalim. V'loi ratis al etzarim al kach. The Torah did not want to cause them anguish. That they become very, very emotional about a close one who dies, that they won't be able to get close to him, to pour out their hearts, and to satiate themselves with crying on it. So the Chinuch tells us, first of all, the Torah itself is not coming. The right way of expressing Drocher Darche Noam is as follows. When a person is traveling on a road, so the road is never the tachlis. In other words, I can't tell you, if I tell you, why don't you drive down to Washington, and the person will ask, well, what do I have to do in Washington? And I'll say, well, the I-95 is a beautiful road. By definition, almost a road is not a destination, and it's not, it's you're not interpreting it as good in terms of destination. But in terms of, does it fit? In other words, if you have a road that doesn't match the tires, if you have tires that don't match the axle, it's very bumpy. Torah is, it's Zocher Darchei Noam doesn't mean that the mitzvahs themselves are rewarding on a physical or even emotional level, but it means the Torah fits the emotional needs of a person. There's not going to be any mitzvah that doing it really runs counter to the tov in a to the nature of a person. So avelus is something that is within the nature of a person, and Torah mitzvahs run within the thread of that. That's point one. Right. Yes.
I mean, in certain halachas of avelus, it does seem that it could run.
For instance,
if somebody va'aleinu buries their mace erev Yom Tov, and then their avelus is cut short, and they have no avelus.
So it's true that it's a specific case where we need to choose between two important inyanim. So it's normal avelus runs a certain course of time, but yontif he has to, you know, it's a collision course between two things. Not everything, but in generally speaking, you know, the layout of the mitzvahs, you're talking about an extraordinary case where two mitzvahs are on a collision course, and we need to prefer one over the other. It's like motherly love is great, but sometimes you need to choose between one of two Siamese twins, and it's not the, you know, so in that case, it's overriding something rather than the etzem mitzvah. But that's the mitzvah itself, is Zocher Darchei Noam, and it's actually in halacha it's used in all sorts of instances as a way of explaining a certain mitzvah and so on. So it means it runs. The second point here that is maybe so obvious that it needs to be emphasized, but I think today it's not so obvious. Normal human emotions are a very important part of a person's personality, needs, and it's part of Chadachinayam. Let me sketch out the example. A person is sitting and misabel on a mace. Now, I come along and I say to him, well, if you believe Bemuna Shlema that the Nefesh is now in Gan Eden and it's going to go up to Chesa Mason, what's all this Avelis about? It's nonsense. Don't be misabel. To which the answer is, well, it's a halach and shacharach. So I'm only doing it to be a kind of halach and shacharach. It's the wrong approach for 99.99% of the people. Tocher d'achinay means Torah goes with, it fits, it snaps into place in human emotion. Avelus is the extraordinary tsar that a person feels at a prater that on the emotional level is forever. We don't live on the intellectual level, we live on the emotional level, and the genuine human emotion is, and a person has to express it in Avelus. If a person is rational in Avelus, it's not exerts our cause, it doesn't fall on the paraduma. Now, it is true, the Chinuch later speaks about a Kohen Gadol, that's like the next mitzvah of the Chinuch. A Kohen Gadol does not mourn, even crave him, so the Chinuch says, because the Kohen Gadol's madrega is that he's almost in Olam Haba. And so in his world, where he's standing, he really doesn't see he doesn't really see the Avelus. But any other person is fooling himself in thinking that that's what he feels. It's very, very important to understand the normal human emotion and to live with it. On the threat of going off more off topic, it's one of our problems in today's dar, where the ideal is so powerful. We have a lot of ideal situations in terms of Shmiras HaMitzvahs, in terms of Limud Torah. We're living, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu has granted us a luxury of being able to do a lot of things, where you have one beaten up Lulav and Esrog for a community. Today everybody can afford to go 50, 100 Lulav and Esrogim and pick with the smallest pitcher to get the best one. And Talmud Torah, where you'd have once upon a time maybe one in a town, two in a town could sit and learn so much. Today we really have the ability to learn so much. We sometimes confuse a very high expectation with a general expectation. If a person, I've gone to a Beis Avel. I once had a situation of being in two Beis Avelos in a very short period of time. Both people lost children. Lo aleinu rachmana litzlan. Terrible. One was an Adam Gadol, almost a very fine younger man. Younger man, idealistic, fine. The Adam Gadol expressed great and deep avelus with a depth. It wasn't just the normal sense of reaction. There was a deep sense of avelus, and being there was a sense of standing on the shoulders of a giant at some of his toughest moments and seeing something sublime about his avelus. There was an avelus of living through a terrible tsar with fine and deep irrigation. The younger man was really meant well, but his attitude was kind of, yeah, it's nothing, it's better than Olam Haba for the kid, and this is just this, and it's exactly because we said Avelus. What bothered him more than else was it wasn't genuine either. That's not how he felt. That's not how his wife felt. They were, but there was a feeling that this is the way you're supposed to be. This is the way you're supposed to look at it. You're supposed to look at it with the tsar of Avelus, unless you're the kind God of the door, and you're supposed to say, but I understand that my feelings and understandings are limited, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the end of it, and there will be an Achama. It's a belief, because that's not the reality where a person is, and that's a very, very important distinction. He says over here that letting out emotion is a real need. He says, "Lishpech as rufcham ulehazbia nafshem fchi olav." Somehow, people go to Beis Avel, and they feel that the job is to joke him out of his avelus. or to be Mesiach Dasan Avelos. That's not, Baruch Hashem, modern psychology understands it. We've been able to see Bechush. The way to cope with a difficult situation is not to ignore it, not to ignore one's emotions. The tzad that a person feels, the expressing of it, the person is supposed to come and give an ear to the oval to allow him to express his bechir and his avelus. That's what comforting means. It says by Eob, they came loned roish, to shake the head with it. In other words, when a person is able to empathize the other person, to live through the tzar with the other person, it allows that person to express his tzar and allows the person to absorb some of that, and that is the nichum process. So if I to put it in a nutshell, nichum avela means going there, allowing, opening oneself up to listening to the avos, feelings about the person, tzar on the person, the chronis of the person. It's a process that's, to quote the chinuch, that's masbia nafsham bevechyolov, and that's the biggest chesed to the person at that time, is to allow him to emote and yourself to empathize and be part of it. And he says, then he concludes, going back to the point that he started about, that the guf is metame, he said, I seen a remez for that tam, the fact that Chazal say that tzaddikim gemurim are not metame. And the reason is, he feels, what's the reason why tzaddikim gemurim are not metame? Because their body was always holy, their body was pure, and therefore it never sinned, it never caused sin, and therefore it's not going to be metame. Shegufam tohar v'noki lo hechti nafsham. Since the body never caused the soul to sin, it therefore is kaddish and so on. The next piece is a piece from the Abarbanel. I don't know if we've ever done Abarbanel yet. Abarbanel is very interesting. He's from the last of the classic Mefarshim. He lived through Geirush Sfarad. He usually is a Ma'asif Chol Machne. He gathers together a lot of the Kadmonim and a lot of key issues we'll see in different places. He will gather all the shittas and bring them down, and will argue with some of them, all of them, but he'll bring it down. Also very clear, kind of, he's methodical, I would say is the right word for it, very structured. He sets up kashas. He does write at length, and that's always scares away people. We've tried to just bring it as briefly, you know, to be mekatzer. His pirush on Tanakh actually is the basis for the Malbum. The Malbum basically writes that he based himself on the Abarbanel's themes and ideas. He was considered a bit more to the philosophers, but he does bring the Kabbalah. So he's one of the classic Mefarshim. He says here, "Vakavod Hashniyahu, the tachlis of the Adam and his shleimus." In other words, tachlis in the sense means the end point. And what gives him a shleimus is that at the end, the two halves of the body split apart, and none of the nefesh is left in the guf. None of the guf is left associated with the nefesh. That's called misa at its best. That the nefesh leaves the guf without having picked up any of the nature of the guf, but it's like a clean separation. It's like, imagine somebody working in a difficult environment. He works with criminals or whatever, and he can pick himself up, leave, and when he's not in his work office, there's nothing remains, no impression remains of the bad that was associated with him. And like Kohelo says, "V'yashuv ha'afalars kishahaya," ideally the earth returns, the person's earthiness returns to the land, to the earth. And the spirit goes back to the God that gave it. And Chazal interpret it, they say, give it back the way it was given to you. The soul was given to you clean, without any blias, without any absorption of chayme, give it back. That, however, the Ranal says in the next paragraph, that separation is very, very hard to find by people. The cuts don't come clean. Because al pi rov, the nefesh has a tremendous netiyah to the chomer. Because they live together, It's just like if you put two people together, no matter how distinct and disparate they are, they absorb from each other. In halacha, b'liya is part and parcel of halacha. The fact that things in contact, there will always be migration of different elements between the two. And therefore, when a person dies, there will remain different elements in the guf and in the nefesh that are not clean. And that's why, and that Chazal say that the nefesh of a wicked person Chazal give different levels of death that is difficult. Mrs. Neshika is like taking a hair out of milk, and a difficult misa is like taking wool against a rusty metal or something like that. I don't know exactly what the something along those lines, something very, very that gives you the creeps. The reason what it means is the when two things are completely separate, there is no difficulty in separating them into two different parts. The hair is laying on the milk, but they never comes mixed together. Mises Neshika means a person has an neshama that never commingled with the guf. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes and takes it, it doesn't, the nefesh is very happy to go and has nothing with it. It's completely separate. The Misa of Ishoim is very difficult because the nefesh has become interwoven with the guf. It's like Velcro. It's just stuck together, and to tear it away, to tear the nefesh away from it, is very difficult. There's an old one of those famous Yiddish anecdotes / jokes that a woman fell in love with a man who was a schnorrer. And she was a wealthy woman, and she liked him. He was a handsome fellow, and he said he agrees to marry her, but he's very, very worried that she's going to start pulling rank on him. You know, after all, he's just a schnorrer, and she's a kind of princess, and a Jewish princess. So it doesn't say if it was American or not. But she was very afraid that she was worried. So he said she must spend a year with him collecting house to house. So she said, no way. He said, fine, then it's not a deal. She wanted him. At the end, she very, very, very reluctantly agreed. And for a year, she spent a wretched year going with him from house to house, collecting insults and some food, and this and that. At the last day, the sun began to set, and the schnorrer turns to his wife and says, okay, in another 10 minutes, that's it, it's over. He said, you know, there's another row of houses afterwards. It would be a shame just to let it go like that. Sort of the idea of the anecdote being, once you get used to something, no matter how bad it is, you kind of let it become part of you. But that's the Ruach HaTumah with the mace. He says, and because in general, you know, we can't, the Chavei Kaddisha can't sit down and decide every mace, how big of a tzaddik was it? Almost every single person, as a rule, everyone has some sort of association with his guf. The Torah was goyze tumah chamura kol tumis tumas ad meis, because that's where tumah comes from. It comes from this chelik of a person. Because it doesn't separate itself and go one here, one there, but rather there are things left over. It's, yes.
You're just saying that a true tzaddik's goof would not be tamei meis, or just
correct.
The Torah has already been
gone. What are you saying? Well, he's not going to the halacha, but he's saying, it's a general cloud that holds true for humanity as a rule, and so on. I want to add a point, though, that's sort of subtle, but it's in his words. But let's think about it. What has happened here? The neshama itself, the pure part of the person, has gone up lamala. Some of his life force, however you understand it, has been left to be part of the guf. That life force, the guf, he's not talking so much about the guf itself that's not mitame. that's metame. Because the Abravanel's approach, the guf itself would not be metame. Because if the cut was clean, like it should be, the guf is a piece of earth that's nothing, nothing to it. It's because it has trapped a bit of nefesh to it. That's where the tumah is. The tumah is this chelik of nefesh that couldn't separate itself. That's where tumah lies. So it, as opposed to the chinuch that says the guf and its urges and its cravings are tumah, I think the Rambam makes a finer point. The nisharu b'minyan v'zikim tam is going on the guf. The chelik of nefesh that stays with it, that's what Chacham said. Atzomus adam mitamin, atzomus chomer. In Yadayim, the Mishnah points out like absurdities, and one of them was, how could it be human bones are tame, chamor's bones are not tame? And it says the fisha'in hatuma el kifi eruv hanefesh beguf. The tuma is because the nefesh is mixed with the guf. So we're talking about the bones of the dead person didn't release all of the nefesh. There was a part of the nefesh that got stuck to it. That's where the tuma is. Now he says, to answer your point about tzaddikim, you do find in extraordinary cases people that didn't have that connection, but the other way around. Their physical was completely subsumed to their seichel. And when they died, their physical had no way to take any part of nefesh with it. And then the neshama, the tahor, leaves the guf completely without any stop. And he says that is an extraordinary event. This is not something that is readily to be found. These are the paladic events. He calls it a plia. And then the guf has no tumah because the offer goes back to the oretz and offer is not makabel tumah. So that's the pshat nigmar ksubis, going back to saying gemara, basically that the chinuch is alluding to, that when Rebbe died, kahuna was batel. Because Rabbeinu HaKadosh was divine in his nefesh and his maisim. And therefore, he was almost not human when it came to it. And it says Reb Chiya that so Reb Chiya says when a person like that dies, there is no tumas meis, and there is no tumah for kahanim because his guf had no chelik of nefesh with it, and that's why kahanim could be asked with his kvura and so on and so forth. So the Abravanel again goes back to the same inyan as the chinuch, that we can say about extraordinary people that they're not mitame. That's the pshat and gemara there. And as far as the general idea of tuma is because something in the guf has been left that is bad, the difference is the chinuch seems to point to the guf itself as being bad. Abravanel seems to point to the part of the nefesh that has not succeeded in lifting itself out. That's where the bet is. If I want to compare something to it, I'll say over something my Rebbe used to say over Reb Chaim Shulevitz. He used to say the neshama is the holiest part of the person. But if HaKadosh, and the guf is the bad part. But Chazal tell us that mazikim, shedim, mazikim are neshamas that don't have a guf. Being in this world without a guf is a mazik. That's what he used to say. Reb Chaim had his sort of cryptic way of speaking, he loved paradoxes and so on. What he meant was, a person who has lofty ideals, but doesn't have the wherewithal and the chachmas achayim how to appropriately realize it, ends up being destructive. In other words, a guf, a neshama needs a guf in the world. Mazikim are supposedly more spiritual than people. It says a little bit like malachim. But since they are not completely spiritual, they can be destructive. A nefesh and a neshama, when it's within the guf inappropriately, that becomes a churban as well. So there's that koach of mazikim, which is worse. Reb Chaim Shulevitz expressed it about a nefesh without a guf. But in the words of the Abravanel, I see it. It's a nefesh that's trapped into gufnias is much worse than the guf. The guf itself is a dead piece of meat. It's earth. It's neither good nor bad. A nefesh that is earthy is much worse. And that's the piece of the puzzle that has tumah to it. Okay?
Rabbi, just a question.
Sure.
There's I heard about Ach B'Sadi Yishkon Alai, that this inyan of tzaddikim, the guf, doesn't necessarily decompose or something. That
right.
How does that fit in here? Is that
we will see at some point. I don't remember where it is. There's a Ran and so on that anything that became there's another Madrega. Anything that was a vehicle for Kedusha begins to absorb Samle Kedusha. But not only there are different Madregas. There is there's a Madrega where the person's nefesh is completely unaffected by the guf. There's a Darga like Chamor of Pinchas Ben Yoyer where the guf and chaimer is affected by the nefesh. So the Ran says, it's a Joshua Ran, that on he speaks about Mata Aaron, about Mata Moshe being that Darga, that those things that were associated with Kedusha, they themselves become a vehicle for Kedusha. So the guf of a tzaddik, since it served as a vehicle for a nefesh, for a neshama, it itself becomes kaddish. That's sort of, I guess, another aspect. I'm sure they're not kaddish for the same dagger, but it's another aspect of it. Okay.